Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Dark Delight podcast with
1,024th Frank.
You were ready.
I just thought of that 10 seconds ago.
And beans.
And beans.
Well, it's you know, this episode is going to be, for me, I'm going to have a little 1 week hiatus, and you have stepped up to the plate to take on next Friday for however long you think you can do it for.
Yeah.
Because we're going down to DC to get this show on the road with the Walkaway March.
I can't wait because I have so little responsibility when it comes to this. I know you have a lot of responsibility. I have so little that it's really just going to be a, you know, we're with me and the guys are just going to go down and walk around and try to meet as many people as possible, try to take as many pictures as possible. And that's it. So next Friday, I'll come in here and I'll record maybe like a half hour. And then my 7 o'clock show, I'm just going to do 1 hour and maybe so I can get on the road with Matt and Rob and our buddy. So
I can't wait to meet. I can't wait to meet Matt in person.
Yeah, Matt. I've been telling him. I've been trying to warn him. I said, listen, do not make me look bad. Okay? Everybody, nobody, be well behaved, please.
Where are you staying, Frank?
I literally, it is a dormitory. And I hate when people say the word literally and they don't use it correctly. This is a 4-bunk dormitory. It has a shared, it's college all over again because I waited. It wasn't because I didn't want to go. It's because so much work was going on. And we got this for real cheap. It's like $300 for the four of us to split. So it's like only $84 each, but it's four. They look like less than twin size mattresses. You know, they look like cots.
Frank, I was listening to a show of yours a few days ago. I forget which day it was. And you were so aptly telling the story, which about the girl that you met from Boston. And we don't need to get into the story per se. But I heard you say you listen and you listen when people talk.
I do.
And I've got to disagree with that.
Well, listen, just because you said, hey, you should do this or
you have been saying you were going to do this the whole time. Don't even start.
But the story about the girl from Boston was about details about what they like and how to turn that into a funny topical gift. This is that, you know, you telling me to get a hotel room is not like a detail about you. I forgot about you personally. You can't compare the two.
Well, I've chosen to. So. Oh. But the dormitory thing, I want to talk about it for one more second. When you say dormitory, do you mean it's like open to the public dormitory or is it just you guys in there with a shared bathroom?
I guess it's like a I don't know. Pretty much. It's pretty much. To be honest, they probably avoided all reference to the word hostel, and that's probably exactly what it is. So
that's going to be fun.
Yeah,
I think you're going to have fun
for four guys. Yeah, I mean that wouldn't have been possible if Lauren was coming down, but I think we're going to make the best of it. And there you go.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a great time. I'm so excited and so stressed. I am.
It's all right because remember the rush of accomplishment after the march in April.
Yes. You know? That was
this could be bigger.
Best day ever.
Yeah. Now you have. So think about all of the help you have for this and all of the coordination for this. This is going to be so much better.
Because the cause is, you know, he has a lot bigger of a megaphone than I did, at least at that time, and still do. I mean, he's got a lot bigger of a megaphone and the message appeals to more people. So ours was about transparency in government. And that's a very niche sort of a thing. His is like, you know, get the hell away from these crazies and do it quickly and do it for the right reasons.
Speaking of those crazies.
Yeah.
I'm looking at these headlines today because I was thinking of some things I want to do for tonight. And the level of projection on the election side of things is unbelievable. First of all, we were pummeled over the head with blue wave the entire year. Then it became blue tsunami when they started becoming a little bit less sure of themselves. They tried to up it to try to make themselves, they tried to pump themselves up. And now I'm seeing places like Politico publishing stories that say, here's how the Republicans can barely hold on to the House. And I'm thinking to myself, it's not working. This is bullshit. All of this is nonsense. I mean, here's the thing I don't understand. It's not like these Democrats are rallying for what? It's not like this is a video game. You know, the elections and political persuasion have everything to do with human capital and persuading human beings. And it's not like that can just be conjured up out of nowhere. If we see that there is a trend of people walking away from Democrats and this and the progressive Marxist nonsense that has inhabited that party, then, I mean, where are they getting it from? I don't care if the same 15 people that will vote Democrat no matter what are just that much more enthusiastic. What, are they going to vote even harder? I mean, what do you, you only have one vote.
Yeah.
I don't get any. It's all projection.
I've got a couple things for you in that vein, actually. And it's great that you started with that, because I did a thread on the 16th. 538 came out with an article. Well, Newsmax posted it. Democrats may get a rare increased turnout of young voters, which are historically left leaning, and they might have President Donald Trump to thank for it, according to a report by pollster and data analyst 538. And this is the quote. Are you ready?
Yeah.
And just let me read my thread. It's not certain that young voters will turn out at a higher than usual rate in 2018, but data does suggest it's possible. So I said, I started off and I was like, it's not certain that young voters will turn out in a higher than usual rate in 2018, but data suggests it's possible. And then the rest of this is going to be written in the voice of like Democrat leftist media. Quote, Democrats poised for massive blue wave as record turnout across every demographic expected. That was how they started, right?
Every demographic.
And then we get like polling on black voters comes back low, and they say Democrats poised for blue wave as Hispanic voters expected to flood the polls this November. And then they get polling on Hispanic voters that comes back low, and they're like, Democrats focus on white women to ensure election victory. That polling comes back low. Democrats sure of minority turnout focus on the elderly to get out the vote. Then that stuff comes back and they're like, oh gosh. They're like, Democrats will take all of the youth vote this November, ensuring November knockout to Republicans. And then they say, Democrats expect a possibility of higher than usual youth turnout to push them over the finish line. And then we end with the quote, it's not certain that they'll be there, but they may. This is the way it's gone. I mean,
it's bad. It's bad. And they thought Taylor Swift can save them.
It's funny because she comes out, right, and they say, oh, look at all these people that registered to vote. But they don't know that those people didn't register to vote in an anti-Taylor Swift wave. Like,
exactly.
You know, they have no idea. And that brings us to Larry Schweikert.
Good old Larry. You know, I've been following him on Twitter for a long time. I never had any direct interaction with him, but just the other night I heard him calling into Sirius XM Patriot. I was like, oh, that's what Larry sounds like.
Larry's great, and I've had several conversations with him. He's fantastic. He's really good. Really,
I heard he's a drummer as well.
Yes, he's a musician. Yeah, he is. He's a musician. Yeah, he's wonderful. And he does really, really, really amazing work in his area, which is measurable data, right? And production and prediction based off measurable data. So he's not a pollster and he doesn't do polls, because basically his argument is, if you poll a horse race before it, you can ask the jockey, the people, who do you think will win? But that's just somebody's opinion. That's not what is actually happening. And he goes through this thread, which I'll put in the show notes, where he talks about the early voter stuff that has come in and what it means. And he basically goes through and he talks about how the numbers that have happened from early voting, and they broke his thread up as I'm trying to read through it right now. That's crazy. It's only got six now instead of, wow, that's nuts. So anyway, I'll put the link to it, but they broke it up on him. Basically,
some of the stuff he was talking about the other night, he was talking about polling trends.
It was early voter. It was early voter response. So people have already sent in their ballots and what the early votes are saying. And basically, it looks like across the board, the usually Republicans in midterms after a presidential election where a Republican wins, everybody's been talking about how it monumentally always leans the other way because the people that didn't win are so pissed off that they didn't win the presidency. They get out to the polls and they vote. In this year, the opposite is true. There is a 7% higher turnout than on Election Day in 2016 from Republicans. Democrats are down, some places 3%, some places 6%. And the overwhelming majority of early votes that are coming in are Republican, which means that the Democrats, like I've said before, are so overprogrammed by their base or so extreme that they don't realize what's happening and they're going to be shocked. That doesn't mean we don't go vote. It just means that people are very energized. And most of the folks that sent in these ballots were doing so in the midst of the Kavanaugh hearings.
And I love how they say that. You know, I would see comments like, you know, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned.
Yeah, we're scorned.
Because they are because they believe that the you know, the Kavanaugh thing was an affront to women when it's not. It just really isn't. And I think that most sane women would know that. And I say sane in a way that, you know, you have to see that the Kavanaugh hearing was actually an attack on women in the way that it damaged so many people's it damaged the way that people are actually able to talk openly about things that have happened to them, especially things of great import and things that are tied to such violent and abusive, you know, incidents. Yeah. It's I don't understand where they get anything, but it's not about understanding, and it's not about science, and it's not about numbers. It's about projection, and they still have dominion over the greatest projection machine there is. That's the media. That's Hollywood. Although the programming has started to break, and I think that's going to be the biggest factor here, that they can't group manifest anymore.
No, they can't do that, and you're absolutely right with everything you just said. I always agree with you for the most part, and that was no different. I will say that, you know, as a woman, which I never consider myself, I don't know if I'm just crazy, but like I don't ever go into a situation thinking I'm a woman.
Yes.
You know, I need to be like, it's just, you know, you don't, you give respect and you get it back. My gender has nothing to do with it. And I was in, you know, before I did this, I was in a male dominated field, and I was never, you know, there were some people who had their preconceived notions, but I was never held back professionally or anything. You prove yourself and people respect you because of it. If anything, it becomes an asset for you. And so I think women have an upper hand in a lot of situations, which may not be fair to men. Honestly, I'm going to get skewered by that maybe, but it's true.
There's actually more reason for left-leaning, center-left-leaning men to feel scorned by the Brett Kavanaugh hearings. I know that most people are going to put on their happy face, their community face, and say, yes, please believe all the women, believe them all, please. But when you really look at what's going on there, if you're a woman, if you're a mother, if you're a sister, if you really want to send your sons and your brothers and your husbands out into a world like that where they can be destroyed with just a faulty statement with no evidence to back it up, you really want to create and hone a culture like that? I don't see how anybody. I think that women came out unscathed from the whole Brett Kavanaugh thing. It was really a worrying time for men.
Yeah. And 2 points on that. Number one, they did ruin it because now, you know, anybody who has gone through this situation alongside of Brett Kavanaugh, watching it even and being outraged about it, aren't going to take the accusations the same again. They've kind of like accidentally ruined it for anybody who has a legitimate claim of this sort of thing. And as a mother, I will tell you that my son adores me. Adores me. It's just different. It's just a different sort of a thing, like a son and a mom and a dad and a son. It's different. And I always teach my son to be respectful, to hold open the door, to treat, you know, you can't hit a girl, you know, the normal things that you go through in raising your children to be respectful humans, especially men. If I ever had to see my son be attacked this way, after doing my best to raise him as a an upstanding citizen who was in civil service his entire life, like dedicating himself to the country, I don't know what I would do with myself. I don't know how his mother made it through. I was destroyed thinking of my son in that position.
Damn, and that's hell hath no fury.
Oh, like, yeah.
A mama bear scorned.
Oh, hell yeah. And then my daughter on the States, people are like, well, what about your daughters? My daughter, she would never, first of all, never would do something like that. If there were ever a legitimate claim to be made, it doesn't take away from the fact that my daughter would be able to make that accusation and then be able to prove it just because this woman had no reason. You know what I'm saying? It's not a blanket sort of a thing.
Yeah, no, it's almost as if you say, how, you know, what is happening with, to ask the question, to frame the question or frame the situation in a way that you're trying to present it as being, well, you know, if Christine Blasey Ford is not able to come before a Senate hearing with no evidence whatsoever and a foggy memory on an event that allegedly happened over 30 years ago, then what is that going to do? How is that going to impact a woman who got raped or assaulted recently, and they have the evidence and they have the doctors? And they have the police reports, and it's not going to do anything because they have a case to be made. It's everything. The straw men that were made and continue to be made and propped up. It's so scary. And you want to know something? That really gets down to the crux of why the group manifestation, the projection by the media, the Democrat leftist nonsense jargon is not working anymore. Because at the crux, at the basis, the base of all this stuff is a battle between one side that wants superiority over all things, and they do not care about standards, law, practice, anything like that. It is about dominance, full spectrum dominance over everything.
Yeah, they don't care how they get there. They don't.
That's it.
And that brings me to something else. We didn't even chat about this beforehand, but we need to address it because we're not on a platform that can take us down for doing it. NPC.
Beautiful.
I mean, it is just the most ingenious meme or thought to ever happen. I really do believe it. I like, they demonstrate the fact that that is true when they fight against it. It's genius.
Yeah.
Explain to people what it is in case people out there don't know.
NPC is non-player character in a video game, and I most commonly known. Okay, so for everybody out there, I've played video games my whole life. I'm not a gamer, but for example, in Grand Theft Auto or something like that, you might have seen your kids or somebody play it. There is the character that you play. You're on a mission. You're doing your thing, but there's also characters that just fill in the universe that you're playing in, and they're programmed. They are artificially, you know, they're controlled by the actual game. They're not controlled by another player. There's no autonomy there. They just do whatever. So when you're on Grand Theft Auto and you're running around and you're stealing cars, you'll see people walking on the sidewalks, and they'll have a certain set of phrases that they say, or a certain set of movements that they make, and they all work and operate and kind of, you know, just kind of shuffle around in similar ways. That's it. So pretty much the comparison is being made between these non-player characters in the video game world to how the political talking points are being pushed on the left, how they're being pushed in the media. Everybody's saying the same thing while proclaiming that they're diverse and diversity is their strength and all that stuff. But it also really shows what it's making a more nuanced point about is that people act differently. We tend to do things that we would never do on our own in a group. We tend to do things and engage in behavior, whether it be theft, which is pretty much taxation, theft, or, you know, intimidation, killing in a group that we never thought. Things like this, the chanting, we adopt everybody else's butt. There is a break in all of that. We said the programming has been fractured, and that is what is what's happening now. They're realizing now that while the programming has broken for so many people, they are still stuck in this loop of learned responses and chants. We saw all the chanting and the call and response stuff going on outside of SCOTUS and all of these pink hat marches.
They were literally teaching them, like, the program inside. Like, this is what you say if this is... And
again, and when you're on the inside, you're talking about that one woman that was going back and forth with a group of protesters. That was a call and response of directions. And they're all like, she wasn't even saying, you know, the whole, you know, hey, ho, ho, this racist Trump has got to go. That kind of crap that everybody does. It wasn't even that. It was, if you want to talk to your senator, and then seven blank-faced bots standing around her going, if you want to talk to your senator, they didn't even alter the words to talk in first person. It's crazy.
I know. And the funny thing about that is, in one of those little examples, the one woman was like, well, she's on our side. Why? They were talking about going to a senator's office, and the one woman, the one free thinking individual in the crowd of all of them, was like, but why? Like, what the hell? It was crazy. And these NPCs, like, you'll walk up to, like, in an innkeeper scene in a video game, you'll walk up and be like, it's the merchant. And the merchant is like, hello, how can I help you today? And they say the same thing over and over. The best part about it is that Twitter began to try to ban these NPC memes based on the fact that they're, quote, dehumanizing.
What it is it's holding a mirror up into the face of robotic people who have given up their individuality.
Yes.
And that is the death of freedom. The death of freedom is giving up your individuality for the cause of whatever the hell else the group wants to do. Because like I said before, human beings will do awful things in groups that they would never consider doing in a one-on-one situation. And let me put up another example for you. Here's an example that maybe people who don't play video games can understand a little bit more. You want to talk about the programming. You want to see what's going on here, what's happened to the average American mind. Steve Colbert, last year in 2017, James Comey, the man that was hated by both Democrats and Republicans for their own political reasons, he's coming out on July 5th in a way that no director ever has or should have, going against against bureau policy, talking about Hillary Clinton and why she should not be charged after listing 13 minutes worth of crimes. And then you have Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Maxine Waters, everybody that you can call leadership in that sinking Titanic of a party is saying this man should be thrown out. He should be removed. He should resign. They want him all gone. Both sides want him gone for different reasons. But they're both very, very enthusiastic about James Comey not being set up to be a good bureau director over there at the FBI. He gets fired by Donald Trump. Steve Colbert goes out in front of his audience. You can go out there and watch this. I commented on it on my show. And he makes the announcement. Well, Jim Comey was fired by Donald Trump. The entire audience starts erupting in claps. They had already learned Jim Comey bad.
Right.
They started clapping that he was fired. And that's when, you know, you watch Colbert's face. He goes, no. Like, oh, why are you clapping? This is bad. And then right, it takes 10 seconds for him to say, no, everybody, nobody got the memo at home. Now we want him in office. Now this is a bad thing that he's gone. And they all turn around and they're instantly convinced because they know of only one thing to do, and that is obedience. It's obedience. And it's because they believe there is some kind of personal and political gratification on the other end of obedience.
It's scary.
Oh, yeah.
It's scary. It really is. I don't even know. Like you said, it's breaking because there's a moment for everybody where, for me, it was a long time ago. But for, you know, a lot of people, there's a moment where you just finally suddenly something clicks and you're like, what in the heck is going on here? Whether it be you listening to a montage of like 100 different news broadcasts all saying the same thing and you're like, oh my gosh, and you start looking further, whatever it is for you. And it's happening more and more and more and more. And like, I really just hope that, you know, there's going to be some we have to leave behind. But I really hope that this is like a turning point for the country where people just start to realize, like, we gotta stop this and be individuals again and try and bring some normalcy back. Some.
Yeah. Normalcy would be great. I mean, but then again, we all have to realize one thing. And hey, you know, eternal vigilance. And what are the founders, and what did the 700 years of enlightenment wisdom tell us in the lead up to how our country was formed and how our government was put together? It's eternal vigilance, because the way that the human species works, that has been figured out a long time ago. I mean, what do you think advertising and marketing is?
Yep.
They knew generations ago, many generations ago, that how the human eye tends to glide across a piece of paper and where the best place to put block ads are. They figured out a long time ago what the color scheme inside a fast food restaurant should be to encourage people to eat quick and get the hell out. I mean, we have been figured out so long ago. To think that breaking away from this and trying to reaffirm some kind of lines and some kind of normalcy again, or at least some kind of the freedom, does not mean that the battle has been won. This is going to come back again, like the killer you thought was dead at the end of the scary movie. It's always going to come back, and we got to stop going to sleep. That's the problem.
It's funny that you mentioned the founders, because somebody on Twitter yesterday said something. General Hayden had made a comment about something and got pretty much roasted underneath it. And he was like, I can't believe how uncivil people have become. And someone said something to the effect of, oh, you know, how do we get around this problem without having to deal with free speech? The founders never anticipated social media. And I was like, do you think that the founders would have made an exception for free speech had they known about social media?
First of all, that is coming from an idiot who doesn't know anything about the founding generation and how little they agreed. Before the last years of Jefferson and Adams' life, they hated each other. Those earlier presidential elections in our country's history, they were mired by unbelievable smear campaigns. Thomas Jefferson had people slandering John Adams as being a hermaphroditic man. You know, like calling him a hermaphrodite with a high squeaky voice and this and that. I mean, this was always an issue. Nobody agreed on anything. If people knew how thin the line was to actually get the 13 colonies together, to actually fight the war together. I mean, there's so many concessions made because nobody agreed.
But isn't that a great thing, though? I mean, I think that's what makes it great, is that they were able to put that crap aside and come to we don't want everybody to agree, so here's how we're going to do it.
Of course, because and it also shows how the country's culture was laid out before us from the very beginning, that it was important for there to be sovereignty of the states. It was important there for there to be sovereignty of the individual. And for that reason, the states were very reluctant to work together because they did not want to fall underneath another central authority.
Monarchy, right. Like you had said, different countries, basically.
Oh, that's what we are. In reality, if we were to wipe away all of the bad things that have been made normal for us, we would look at these 50 states as 50 independent republics. And there's a very small, limited amount of things that the federal government should be doing, i.e., it should be creating a free trade zone within the 50 states so that you don't have Maryland putting tariffs on Delaware. You know, you don't have things like that. And it should provide for the common defense. And it should be an arbiter in international trade affairs. That's pretty much it. That's it. Everything else was supposed to be whatever local and state governments are doing. It's your responsibility to be active on the local level.
We're supposed to be giving people money to buy food.
Yeah, exactly. Like Harris.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're also supposed to be paying for you to go to the doctor because it's a right. To go to the doctor is a right. Let's talk about FinCEN.
Okay.
Now, I know you did a lot of work on this, and I did a lot of work on it, too. Not as much as I normally do, I got to be honest, and I tried my best here with the limited time that I have. No excuse. I'm really trying to manage everything. Really, really. I promise you I am. But why don't we talk about this from the beginning? So, and how it ties into, like, James Wolfe, and how it ties into Bettina, which I can add, and how it ties into the leak investigations that are going on, etc. So, do you want to do the intro on what this is?
Well, yeah. First of all, let me just say that the work I did is just pretty much sifting through the amazing work that people like Brian Cates and Harold Finch and Rex, Imperator Rex, and everybody else has been doing because I feel bad for the average person who has been hoodwinked by the media because this is so complex.
Yeah.
And there's so many strings attached to so many people. And this network that as we dig deeper, the network, the support network that has been burrowed inside of our federal government is so vast.
Without us doing this stuff, Frank, without us doing this stuff, because I read the whole thing and I outlined it and stuff. And, you know, you poked through everybody else's analysis to bring a more cohesive picture. People on the news, like if they would have reported this, senior FinCEN employee arrested, nobody even knows what the hell that means. Nobody would have any idea why it's important. They didn't go into the details of what happened and why it's a big deal. I mean, how would anybody know?
Well, let's get some basics down first. First of all, FinCEN, Financial Criminal Enforcement Division of the U.S. Treasury. It receives reports from banks. So this is an example that was given to you and I, Tracy. If I were to go to a bank with Mohammed wearing an Al-Qaeda T-shirt and pull out $10,000 without explaining why, that bank will immediately file what is called a suspicious activity report, SAR. If you see SAR popping around, that's what it is, suspicious activity report. That goes to DHS, who then routes it to the Treasury Financial Criminal Enforcement Division. Now, that system was set up to catch drug transactions of cartels and whatnot, but it was later adapted for terrorism. So what we started realizing a while ago in the media was that someone was leaking financial records of Michael Cohen, and they were reporting on financial records of Paul Manafort and all that stuff. We know that Michael Avenatti was bragging about having this stuff and having the keys of taking down Trump and all that stuff. But, you know, we started wondering where the hell is this all coming from? And it looked like that we had another leak on our hands. And of course, for everybody out there who thinks that Jeff Sessions isn't doing anything, really sit back and look at the body of work that has been done to first clear out the playing field of all of these obstructive people before we can actually get around to prosecuting real crimes. This is one of them, you know. And as Rex was pointing out, as we're looking into this, this woman, her name is, let me see here. Natalie Edwards. She has four names, but we're just going to reduce it to Natalie Edwards. She was pretty much taking suggestions on who to target and what information to obtain from people like BuzzFeed journalist Jason Leopold. And also, she was compiling files at the same time for the Senate Intelligence Committee along the way. So remember that, too, because now we're starting to see this leak network starting to, you know, almost like these little beads of mercury that are starting to piece together like the T-1000 at the end of Terminator 2. OK, you're starting to see all this stuff to come together because we know that the Senate Intelligence Committee is leaking like a sieve. And then you have this coming out. Unbelievable amount of stuff. She had over 24,000 of these documents on her government thumb drive that was issued to her.
She had terrorism related files on there also.
See, that's the only thing I didn't find anything. I heard that she had terrorism related files, thing that had to do with ISIS and everything else, and pretty much documents that originated from the SSCI. Where did have you seen any proof of that?
Don't put me on the spot. I could swear it's in the indictment.
No, I read through it. I read through it looking for that because I heard those same things. So we got to figure that out because that's even there's already no matter what the indictment ties her to the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Yeah. So that's Wolf and there's Wolf. Right. So there's. Wolf. Yeah. And you know, think about what BuzzFeed has done. I mean, I think in that conversation you're talking about, Frank, I said, remember the dossier because BuzzFeed released the dossier, too. So let's think about
the dossier. Allie Watkins, she not only worked for New York Times, but she worked for BuzzFeed. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Leopold, BuzzFeed. And like you said, the dossier, they've been at the BuzzFeed has been at the crux of this since the beginning.
Yeah. And it was BuzzFeed that went back and sued the DNC or subpoenaed the DNC to try and get their server to prove that the dossier was true. Very interesting angles there. But, you know, James Wolfe was indicted. It was his plea deal was announced the day before this press release came out with this arrest. That timing, I don't think is lost on anybody. No. In addition, they mentioned Bettina in here and she was that spy that came out. She was indicted. She was a Russian spy, supposedly, who was very tight with the NRA. And we know where the NRA connection comes in because of Don Jr. and that dinner he was at. You know, the whole rules that were all of that nonsense.
Yeah.
And what I found really interesting that I didn't see anyone else pick up on was during the middle of this Bettina story back in July, the prosecution in her case came out and accused her of wanting to of advancing sexual, making the request, I'll give you sexual favor A if you give me board, you know, position B. And the defense attorney was like, that is, I have no idea what you're talking about. That is completely ridiculous. The New York Times ran with it. Everybody ran with it.
Mm.
The defense attorney was like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Show us some evidence. Nothing ever surfaced. It was retracted. We never heard anything else about it. Now I'm thinking they were planting little leaks and the leaks are real, the news is fake stuff back then. Tell the person doing the leaking. She's, you know, Bettina's mentioned in here. This FinCEN person is sharing Bettina information. Tell one of the people in her circle to tell the prosecutors in this case or the FBI in this case that she had some kind of sexual impropriety thing going on and see if they go with it. And they did. And that was one way to also pin it down to her.
Hey, leaking, strategic leaks. You know, when I was doing this last night, when I was putting some of this together last night, because of course there's more to come out. Last night we were speculating as to who Natalie Edwards' boss was, because we also learned in the indictment that her boss and an assistant director over there was pretty much a part of it all, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is crazy because we had the same thing happen with Paige and McCabe. Paige leaked to the media because McCabe told her to.
Yep.
And that's why he's in hot water. So it's like an institutionalized thing. Your boss tells you to do something. You, as your NPC drone, just does it. And she was trying to, Edward was trying to, you know, make herself out to be some kind of whistleblower. That's not whistleblower level stuff, guys.
That's just pathetic. When I read that she called herself a whistleblower, I just thought that was pathetic.
What is she whistleblowing on? People's financial transactions that might not have even been criminal?
No, yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It was a pathetic. pathetic, a weasel excuse when she knew that she was cooked. Because remember this, and Rex pointed this out on Twitter big time. He asked three main questions, and he asked them over and over again.
Yep.
Number one, did Mueller's a special counsel team use FinCEN suspicious activity reports as evidence, or those evidence to indict and prosecute Paul Manafort? If so, how did they obtain it? And if it wasn't done legally, how was it obtained? Because in all of the Paul Manafort scenario, none of this came up.
No.
None of this came up. There's no news about a subpoena, and that's the only way that this would have gotten done. And to be honest, if you have this woman, Natalie Edwards, in at FinCEN over there, and she wants to whistleblow on something. I mean, we have a special counsel that has been put together. You don't think that they would have gone and they have subpoena power.
Not only that, but Weissman himself, and then there's the connection to Orr and all of this, too. But Weissman himself was speaking to the media before he was appointed, and he was in the financial division. No.
Yeah.
So
Weissman was in. Yeah. What the heck? I think it was it organized crime? I don't know what it was. Either way. Yeah.
It had ties to it. And Weiss, it wouldn't be the first time Weissman's been. He's done some horrible things. Weissman has, especially in the Enron case and otherwise. And it wouldn't be the first. This would destroy the special counsel if it comes out. And I don't see how Mueller would actually go ahead and use that stuff if it was obtained illegally. How could he do that? I mean, unless the end game was to have everybody's prosecutions overturned for and completely destroy his own reputation at the same time. I don't understand how he would use that information in his case and not have it legally.
Well, that's the whole thing here. That's the whole thing here, that the subpoena, the idea of a subpoena, this stuff being subpoenaed, did not pop up anywhere, not in any transcripts of the entire Manafort trial or anything. So that looks weird. The whole whistleblower thing doesn't shake out. This was just another rogue element of a very brazen. And I guess, and they all feel very empowered over there in these federal agencies to do whatever the hell they want and to work directly with the press. Now, it's one thing if you have somebody like James Wolfe, who is plopping things into the lap of people that he's screwing or whatever like that. And you're a member of the press. And I really do believe that if you stumble upon classified information, and you have a First Amendment right to print whatever the hell you want. If you stumble upon a big story, you have to use some personal discernment. How far do you want to go? How much damage do you want to inflict? How much do you want to put yourself into the crosshairs? But I do believe that you have that right, as long as you did not commit espionage. Now, on Leopold's scenario with BuzzFeed and working with this woman Edwards, what you have here is pretty much co-conspirators. He's pointing her to subjects. He's pointing her to people. He's asking her to go snoop around, and he's just a member of the press corps. I mean, that's a completely different relationship.
It's really, really, really horrible what the media has become. I'm reading Cheryl Atkinson's book, The Smear. And I recommend it, Frank, honestly, very highly. Someone said I should read it. And she goes through all of this, like what has happened to the media and how. It is not, there are like literally no independent, like no journalists that are doing independent fact-based research anymore. They're all propaganda mouthpieces for like whatever special interest group has them at the time. And she makes a point to go through how even congressional staffers being paid by our tax dollars are tasked with finding dirt on other people, trying to advance certain narratives. It's disgusting. It makes you very sad and feel very helpless. You know, like, what are we going to do about this? What are we? It's the whole media. What are we going to do about it? Like, how do you even begin to change that? It's institutionalized, cultural. It's crazy.
Oh, the only way that you change it is to not not look at the media as an institution that needs to be cleaned out and reformed. No, let it die. It's dying a rightful death right now. You know, the time of propping up industries, whether it be the automotive industry, whether it be the big banks, whether it be media itself and their credibility. I don't want to see a new person replacing Don Lemon. I want Don Lemon to help take down the entire movement over there. Keep talking your shit. The rest of us are going to use the internet. And for everybody out there who thinks that the internet is going to stay into the hands of only a few big companies in the future, I mean, I've been reading a lot differently. I've been reading that we are actually on the over the horizon is a way for people to generate internet connections and connectivity and network and networking options independently. Outside of the infrastructure laid out by Verizon and Sprint and all that stuff, that is in the future too. That, you know, for any of us to think that the way to fix what we have wrong with things right now is to make up new rules to try to clean out the institutions that are already in place is ridiculous. Let them die and crumble. We need to be able to have the freedom to walk away from it and go somewhere else and not be held down in these same institutions. That's the problem here.
Yeah.
But we're doing that. I mean, what's this podcast?
And it's great because I was talking to someone yesterday on the phone the same way and saying, like, if none of this would have happened, then I wouldn't, you know, there wouldn't be an avenue for people to step in and try and fix it and change it.
Yep.
There's an article that just came out actually on this sort of on the same vein from Politico. Title is Mueller Report PSA, Prepare for Disappointment. And be forewarned that the special counsel's finding may never be made public. And it says, President Donald Trump's critics have spent the last 17 months anticipating what some expect will be among the most thrilling events of their lives. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's final report on 2016 election interference. They may be in for a disappointment. That's the word Politico got from defense lawyers working on the Russia probe and more than 15 former government officials with investigation experience spanning Watergate to this case. The public shouldn't expect a comprehensive and presidency-wrecking account of Kremlin meddling and alleged obstruction of justice by Trump, not to mention an explanation of the myriad of subplots that have bedeviled lawmakers, journalists, and amateur Mueller sleuths. Mueller's findings may never even see the light of day.
What can he possibly tell us? Seriously, I mean, think about this. What has he been able to show us as his big catches? He gave us a couple of dozen faceless Russian names that'll never see an American courtroom, who were attached to hashtag campaigns on Twitter and perhaps $100,000 of dispersed internet Facebook ad funds that were used before and after the election. And aside from that, you have General Flynn, who is unrelated to anything and has not even been sentenced yet, probably never will be. Then you have George Papadopoulos, who got 2 weeks for lying to the FBI, and his story is becoming more and more interesting. On top of that, you have Carter Page, who will never be charged with anything. And then on top of it, he was only used so they can spy on everybody else around him within a couple of degrees of separation. And then lastly, the crown jewel, Paul Manafort. What's the biggest problem with Paul Manafort? Not only was everything that they got him on unrelated, yes, they were crimes, and it just so happens if you launch a phony investigation, you just might find some real crimes, but it wasn't related to what they thought they were going to get. But everything we just talked about with FinCEN makes the evidence that was used to put him in jail look very, very, very dubious.
Yeah, Dan Bongino was making the point on his podcast yesterday that we've talked about this before. It was a circular thing. They were just whitewashing laundry through over and over and over again, recycling. The FinCEN would feed the dossier, which would feed back into the FBI, and it was just all created, manufactured stuff. And he actually makes the point that it could be possible that the FinCEN stuff was how, like, we know that Avianti, as he calls him, CPL, got his information about Cohen's bank accounts from this leaker, even though it's not mentioned in the indictment, because he was talking about SARS, SARS, right?
Yeah, SARS. Yeah. Well, the reason why I SARS is
It's a disease.
Of it, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, they were talking about those SAR reports, probably better, and them being the way that Avenatti got that information, but also then Bongino was saying it could be that though they ran those reports without a specific identifier, and that came back for his Prague allegations and money stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It really does. It makes the house of cards, that whatever is left is standing of it, because a good portion of the house of cards has already fallen. But it makes it all look really awful. Really, really awful. Not only does this make the government look bad, and it not only makes the resistance look bad, because, of course, once again, they do not care about the country. They do not care about anything but power and manipulating that power. But it also makes the special counsel itself looks so awful. So really, what do you think the revelation, whatever revelations that is going to be put forward by Mueller coming after the election, what do you think that means? Do you think that's just the last attempt to save some face?
There's not going to be any allegations. It's going to say we were unable to find any collusion between Donald Trump and Russia.
Right. But he's waiting until after the election. He's obviously.
Well, yeah.
He's got to save some face. If he says that within the next 10 days, whatever kind of a blue toilet flush there was going to be is going to be just a leaky faucet.
Either way. Like, you know, he's honestly at this point, honestly, he's damned if he does and he's damned if he doesn't. Yep. I don't think anything is going to be coming out before the election of massive importance. Anyway, we have Rosenstein going in to testify behind closed doors with the leaders of the committees. I want to see someone in handcuffs, Frank.
I want to see quite a few people in handcuffs. You know, that's it. That's it for me. That would be a great, great Thanksgiving.
First of all, right after these midterm elections go the way we hope they will, because everybody's going to do their civic duty and get out and vote for, you know, the right people. We're going to be able to sit back like we did after 2016, hopefully, just for a few minutes and kind of bask in the fact that we've again saved our country. And then we've got another 2 years. We've got to finally get this story completely out. And then we're back in presidential election time.
Which would be great.
Listen,
I'll tell you one thing. I'm not worried about 2020 if things go well for the country in November, because you're talking about another 2 years. This was 2 years of this is the most resistance we were going to get in 2 years, because you had the investigations that can hunker down the president just a little bit. You had a lot of the thoughts, all the tricks that they had were going to be used. This is the mark that they needed to hit, because after this, if the majorities are kept in place or grown, there's no way to stop these House and Senate investigations from reaching conclusions.
Right.
There's no way to stop it. There's nothing else they can use to. I don't care how many hurricanes show up after this. Hurricane season ends in a couple of weeks. Okay, so there's nothing that's going to be used to be able to delay this any further. November is so huge.
It's
because
so important.
Oh, yeah, because it gives us 2 years of absolutely nothing in the way to stop this any further. The train is just going to go right through. And then 2020 is going to be, oh, my God.
I mean, who are they even going to put up that would have any – who – is there anyone? Do they have anyone with any ideas?
No.
The Democratic Party is done. They're done.
Good. Because you know what? They've dragged a lot of well-meaning, intelligent people who lean center left, and maybe they have family loyalties and traditions that they're held in. They dragged a lot of them down into the underworld. You know, those people should have to face the burning house fire that is their party and say, you know what? Maybe it's time to rethink something and get a little bit more moderate and throw my hands up in the air and say, I can't deny this dumpster fire anymore. You know, I pray that the mothership goes down just so that the spell is broken on so many people.
It's got to happen. If we continue to get Veritas videos coming out over the next like week or two, I can't believe it's in 2 weeks, right? It's going to be 2 weeks till midterms.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's the 19th now. So let me see here. Next, 1 week is the 26th. 2 weeks is November 2nd.
Two and a half weeks. Crazy.
2.5.
No, for real. I'm going to be up all. Are you doing an election night special?
I would like to. Yes. And I was thinking I may go live at 8 o'clock that night instead of 7 and just stay on until midnight.
I hope it's not like Donald Trump's race when everyone was up till 4 a.m.
Yeah, but I left the studio in 2016 around 1 a.m. because at that point we knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping by midnight we have a good way. Rich Barris said he's going to be called. I have to get you involved. We have to do a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I would love to. I would love to be. I had fun doing the State of the Union with you.
That was awesome.
Yeah. My wine and State of the Union. It was fun. I think it's a good thing to do. People can tune in, kind of hang out with us and, you know, keep me on for a little while or a long while, whatever. Just see if you get like a telethon's worth show of folks come chiming in as we watch election results roll.
Yep. Yeah, no, I think that'd be a fun night. I think a lot of people would enjoy that.
Well, we're a little early today, but I think we've pretty much exhausted our topics, no?
Yeah, you know, that's pretty much it. I was looking at that. I'm looking at the things here today, and there's just, what is this? Why are they Hillary 2020? You just finished saying, what do they have? I went to Drudge Report, and the first thing I see is Hillary 2020, one last run.
Listen, Helga is running in 2020, okay?
I hope so. She will win.
She wants to come back. She wants to do another Periscope. I warned her that it's live, Frank, you know?
Yeah.
You know, if people aren't liking it, she's going to have to deal with that.
Well, hey, you know, you should get Helga to do a Periscope in about 2.5 weeks to 3 weeks when Mueller comes out and say, I got nothing.
Oh, yeah. She can defend her people.
She can defend her people. Finally.
She does that all the time, by the way. And she gets so giddy when I talk about it. That's like her thing. Helga 2020. She's funny.
They need somebody. So
she says on the Periscope, if you guys haven't heard it, I'll put it in the show notes because it was so spur of the moment. I have to talk about it. It was so funny. It was so spur of the moment. We were, you know, in exile from our home during the hurricane a couple weeks ago. And my daughter wanted to do a Periscope as her Helga, who is from Russia. And she did this whole big thing. And I said, you got Donald Trump elected. And she says, yeah. And I said, how? And she's got this accent. She goes, very simple. I get all my friends. I group them in a room. They vote. And then he win.
That's it. Over and over again.
That was my. She's going to be
13?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, she's got a great, bright career ahead of her.
Yeah, she called me a Russian, too. I heard Tracy Beans is a Russian.
No, she'll have her own podcast by 16.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, she will.
All right. Well, thank you guys for tuning in to the Dark to Light podcast with...
1,024th Frank.
And Beans, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and on radioinfluence.com. Don't forget to, guys, check out the march, and I hope to see you guys down there. I'll be back in a couple weeks.
Yes, you will.
Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.